Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on thought, faith, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Also in the studio with us today are Chris Holowaty and Tom Dunn, and we're here to talk about a ballot initiative that's going to be voted on in the California primaries. By the time you hear this, it will already have come and gone, but there is Proposition 22 on the primary ballot that has to do with what is recognized as a legal marriage in the state of California. Only marriage between one man and one woman will be recognized as legal. So with that as the topic today, I'm sure that the flak will fly in many directions here. I'm sure that you out there in your cars or at your desk or in your home will have many opinions, because I'm sure you'll hear differing opinions here in the booth, and I'm sure you'll have a different opinion than somebody here. And when you do, jot it down and send it to us or give us a call, because we'd like to hear what you think about this. But what do you guys think about the proposition? Should only marriage between a man and a woman be recognized as legal and binding in the state of California?
I think at the very worst, it's ridiculous. At the very best, it's dangerous to take a particular moral position and write it out as law. I know that even as I say that, there's a lot of conflict within me, because, I mean, we have laws that say you can't murder someone. And I personally believe that it's wrong to murder. So,
And that is a moral behavior.
And that is a moral behavior. It's a moral choice. But where do we draw the line? The Christian Coalition would have us draw the line to the far, far right of what they consider to be right Christian moral behavior. There are libertarians on the far left that would say no one should really tell a person what to do. I think it's dangerous when government gets into the bedroom of people, whether they're Christian or non-Christian, because the coin can easily flip. By that I mean you can get someone in there that says, you know what, I think it's wrong for prayer to occur in public places, and legislate that. A politician could try to legislate that it's wrong for certain sex acts to occur between even legally married people.
That is the case in many states.
Yeah, so I think it's just very complex and can be very dangerous.
But I think that this particular issue goes beyond government getting into the bedrooms of people, because if homosexual marriage is recognized in the state of California, it won't only affect what goes on in their bedrooms, it will affect a lot of other policies.
I think that's something that we have to keep in mind when we address that, Brad, is that this is, for example, something about Proposition 22 here in California. One needs to recognize that this is not necessarily a proposition about sexual behavior. This is a proposition about what is legally recognized as the institution socially of marriage. Marriage is a huge social institution. It changes our finances. It changes our obligations. Binding contracts. California is a mutual property state. So when you have joint property, joint custody of children, rights to sign legal papers, those kinds of things, even such things as who is it that has the say over organ donations, over mechanized medical support, life support, those kinds of things. Huge questions going into the right of first say legally for an individual. What happens in old age? When partners begin to make decisions for each other, typically married partners, what happens with alimony, what happens with, again, child custody, those kinds of things. It's really talking about a legal institution. What do we recognize as life insurance, beneficiaries, all of these other things, you see. For a Christian to be against homosexuality as an orientation or homosexual behavior as an action really is a separate issue from a Christian supporting or failing to support society's right to create marriage as a secular social institution. This is a classic problem between the church and the state, with, I believe, Napoleon being the first one to create secularized marriages and make them the domain of the political realm rather than of the religious realm. Up until the time of, really, the post-Enlightenment era, marriages are a religious ceremony that then has power with the state. Now, after Napoleon, with the institution of civil marriage, we have competing marriages. How is it that the church defines marriage? How is it that the state defines marriage? well, the state now, at least in America, is representative of the people's wishes. How do the people wish to organize and express their social institutions? And as such, it will reflect the populace. That's our basic fundamental strategy for governance in the United States. So now we have to say, well, do we go back to the same fight of marriage as a social institution, marriage versus marriage as a religious institution, or do we seek to say the majority of society has the right to order its civil marriage however it wants, and whatever the majority wishes, so be it.
I can understand the flack, though, that's being put up, because we are in a society where we do have some voice in what happens in the election. And as Christians, we want to see things go in favor of our beliefs and values.
But as Christians, do we hold that a civil marriage is really the essence of marriage anyway? For example, we'll say that two persons, and this is problematic, I recognize widespread, there's much Christian dissent on the issue of divorce, and we're not really touching that here, but in the eyes of the church, we'll even say Catholic Church, okay, because it's much more clearly defined. In the eyes of the Catholic Church, two persons who divorce without grounds considered valid by the church, who just decide we don't want to be married anymore, we don't like our marriage, we are going to separate and we are going to divorce. They then go through a civil ceremony of divorce, a civil legal process of divorce. Does the church view them as divorce?
No, not unless the church annuls the marriage.
Not unless the church annuls the marriage. So then when those two go to be married again and say that they get married civilly,
then it's adultery.
That's considered adultery, and they're technically subject to excommunication because the church will not recognize the validity of a civil protocol for this marriage. So do we say, hey, they can do whatever they want and go through whatever process they want in the world. They can say they're married. They can have bank accounts together. They can have life insurance together. It doesn't matter. We don't consider them married. And that's fine with us. The world does it its way. We do it our way. Or do we seek to say the world will conform to our way of forming our religious institutions? Where does the battle reside in that issue?
I mean, you could almost bring up the argument that marriage is a spiritual sacrament and that the government has no right to legislate it or touch it or do anything with it because it's a holy, it's like communion. It would be like the government legislating communion for whatever reason. No, it's a holy, spiritual, intimate sacrament between us and our God. You could say the same thing for marriage. You have no right to touch it because it is a holy sacrament between us and our God.
Yes, but then do we put in regulation that prevents people from eating bread and wine or giving them access to bread and wine? So, you know, if someone wanted to play at sacrament, play at Eucharist, if we have a secular society where we say, no, Eucharist is completely governed by the church, no one else is allowed to partake in it, as, you know, really the Roman Catholic Communion has been for many, many years, did that prevent the Protestants from going ahead and performing a communion? Does that prevent satanic churches from doing a black mass, you know, in the sense of a dark satanic communion? No. Do we legislate a nullification of access to those things which we regard as holy? Or do we simply say ours are holy, yours are false gods? We know that false gods are false gods. It doesn't matter what they do. Yeah, but they'll get bank accounts. Yeah, but they'll... Well, that's money. That's not really, you know, that's not a big Christian domain anyway. Well, they'll get kids and government support, and they're citizens too. Do they not deserve governmental support? You know, see, I think the knife cuts both ways on that. In a sense, we find Christ saying, let the dead bury their dead. You know, they're the blind leading the blind, they'll both go into the ditch. And Jesus is like, either they want to come over here or they don't. If they don't want to, let them go play, because that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for the people who want to listen. And let the dead bury their dead and let them play their games.
There's another issue kind of playing on that legislation about morality, that if homosexual marriage is recognized as a valid marriage and homosexuality is seen as no big thing in our culture, and as the homosexual groups lobby for more and more power, more and more rights civilly and in society, then churches can be accused of discrimination practices in hiring if they don't want to hire a homosexual to be on their board or, you know,
has the position of the church historically then been, let's avoid that which costs us for living out our convictions? Or has it been, let the secular world do whatever it wants, we will continue in our convictions, and if it means we get lawsuits or prison sentences, that's what we do. We're Christians, we live according to a certain way, and we will not hire someone that disagrees with our moral behavior. Yes, but you're liable to lawsuits. Sue me. Yeah, but they'll take away your money. Well, that's what they did with Christians for hundreds of years. Yeah, but they'll throw you in prison. Paul, Jesus, John the Baptist, hello.
But they'll take away your life.
That seems to be the Christian paradigm, not so much protect our lives by changing our society, but live out our lives in the presence of the affliction of society, because it marks a difference between the way society lives its life and the way we live our life. When we bring society closer, the closer we bring society to our way of life, the less distinction there is, and the society sees no differentiation or power in the Christian life, because it doesn't stand for anything that the society doesn't. You know, 2.4 kids, dog, microwave, Volvo, whatever it might be. You just kind of roll with the flow. And yeah, I'm a Christian. Money says in God we trust and off we go. That's one of the greatest difficulties the church faces in our culture, is the blurry boundary between Christianity and secularism.
You know, there's something I heard on a video in regard to being scared of being thrown in jail or having your life taken or whatever. That there was a Colombian pastor, he said that I am immortal until I have accomplished what God has for me on this earth.
And you're immortal anyway.
Adam, that brings up a whole nother issue. Just, is it the Christian's job just to save society? Is it the Christian's job to right all wrongs? Is it the Christian's job to take all of the behaviors that are non-Christian and make them Christian? Is that what Jesus meant by us being salt and light?
Well, that's really the question of whether righteousness is in behavior or not, or whether it's in intention. For example, we could put very, very rigid controls on homosexual behavior, which I believe are appropriate as a society for us to do. It is reasonable and viable for a society to govern the behavior of its members. That's appropriate. Every law is a moral law, because it says somebody who naturally wishes to do something is not allowed to because a different majority condemns that behavior. Maybe we can get into that in a little bit. But we could make very rigid controls on homosexual behavior and not stop what Christ would consider to be homosexual sin. We could have extremely rigid controls on heterosexual behavior and not stop heterosexual sin.
It didn't in the past when there were rigid behaviors.
And it doesn't now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can place a chastity belt on everyone and not stop what Jesus considers to be adultery, because Jesus says it happens in your heart. So how can we create social institutions thinking that somehow we are correcting the problem of homosexuality or of adultery or whatever, when we are the people who say Christ says this is centered in your heart? We haven't stopped murder, even if nobody kills anyone, because Christ said, we hold as Christians, that Christ said murder happens when you hate somebody without a cause.
But don't you believe, Adam, that if you make it easier and easier to commit those acts, that it will become more and more rampant?
It's always been easy to commit those acts. If I can't get a gun, I can pick up this table and club one of you.
No, I understand, but if the penalty is so great that you go, gosh, you know, if there's not really a heavy penalty for killing somebody, then that would encourage somebody, I think, to say, you know, it's worth it for me to go ahead and kill them.
Yes, there is that organizing aspect of society. The difficulty is this. First off, there's a hidden posit there that, A, criminals are always the ones accused. If somebody is accused, they must be a criminal. Hence the argument with Jesus. A return to Roman law where you are guilty until proven innocent. How many injustices does it take for that law then to be wrong in its scope? So we'll say that we're going to fix the problem of forgery, check forgery. And we're going to cut the left hand off of everyone who writes a check. Will that solve the problem of forgery? Yes. But you see, we have the second thing that we've hidden there is that somehow the actions of the state to stop an action are always justified, and that the state itself has no moral obligation. You see, so now if we cut the left hands off of everyone who forges a check, how many falsely accused people, falsely condemned people does it take losing their hands to say that is not a good law and it's not worth the deterrent to stop the crime? Or when does it become an issue of the state's moral obligation now has been violated, and you haven't removed immorality, simply transferred it from forging checks to oppressive state government? See, because there's a moral obligation for government as well. So if we make huge deterrents, quote unquote, to crime, what we've really said is we will create a draconian government which has its own immoral actions of oppression because it makes punishment greater than crime. Like the three strikes law. People don't understand how easy it is to commit three felonies, you know? Say someone commits three relatively minor felonies. Is it appropriate to take away someone's entire life for those felonies and put them in prison? is the degree of harm that they've created by these crimes, the degree of harm inflicted on them by the state. You see, and so now we haven't solved the moral dilemma. We've simply transferred it with the assumption that whatever the state does is right. That's why there was very little crime in Nazi Germany or Stalinist Soviet Union. We would say Stalinist Soviet Union was wrong because its greatest crime was the state's oppression of its populace. And yet we say if we have bigger prisons and greater law enforcement schedules, we will solve the issue of homosexual or other immoral behaviors.
So I guess it goes back to the question of what is this proposition seeking to do? Is it seeking to protect marriage, which is, from the ads that I've seen, that seems to be the goal. We want to protect marriage to be with a man and a woman, and that's it. With an underlying tone that there is something dangerous or something to be feared in allowing homosexual marriage because it threatens heterosexual marriage or somehow undermines the sanctity of heterosexual marriage. And I think the point that Adam brought up earlier is really valid. We as Christians need to be careful with what we set as our goals, because in seeking to utilize government to establish what we consider to be moral and godly behavior, we have handed over the power to the government, as opposed to, as we're talking about with communion, with anything else that is a sanctity of the church, a sacrament of the church, rather. We need to continue to live our lives and differentiate ourselves as Christians and not be so concerned about legislating what everyone else is doing out there.
So let me ask you this then, Chris. Again, this will be a moot point because by the time people hear this, the election will have come and gone. But when I go to the ballot box, do I say, no, I don't think that the state should recognize only one man and one woman as a legal marriage? Should I say, no, anybody can get married and the state should recognize it? That's a great thing. Or should I abstain from voting at all and say, well, I'm just going to pray and let God sort it out?
Okay, one perspective on that. What are we trying to accomplish by voting against homosexual marriage? We're not trying to preserve what marriage is to the Christian. That is something between me, my wife, and God, and the community that I live in of believers. That's a covenant that I've made before God with my wife in front of a group of witnesses. Is that what is recognized as marriage in our country?
No.
Not necessarily. For most people, marriage is a legal contract. It is an agreement. It is a statement of commitment to someone that I'm going to stand by you and be with you for the rest of our lives. But it's really not a holy issue. It is very much a secular issue. It is an arrangement of convenience or of benefit for two people. So if I'm living in a society where there are a number of benefits and advantages to entering into a legal contract with someone where two people are going to agree to take care of each other and look after each other, and as they grow older, if one of them gets sick or whatever, the other person is going to be helping them. If I'm looking at it in that perspective, and there are now government structures set up to help and to aid two people who are trying to get through this life together, am I being cruel by saying, no, I'm sorry, the two of you, even though you want to live together and take care of each other for the rest of your life, I don't think the government should help you at all. And I'm going to use the government now as my club to hit somebody who I disagree with because of their moral behavior.
And where does it go from there? Well, we don't agree with them, so let's take away even more rights. Let's push them even further to the fringe, you know? We won't let them get married. We won't let them have jobs. We won't let them buy things. We won't rent to them. We won't... Exactly. And then they end up with a pink star, and then we put them in internment camps. I mean, where does it end, you know? I mean...
And why is it only homosexuals that we're doing this to? I mean, we don't have these kind of sanctions against greedy people.
Gluttons. Imprison the gluttons.
Right. Everyone who is grossly overweight should not get married because they are sinning. And by living together, they're encouraging each other to eat too much. I mean, really, what we are kind of being selective with this type of sin. I'm going to do everything I can to prevent it from happening, even to the point of not allowing you to have any kind of benefits from your government to help you out.
But there's an interesting thing that at least that's still recognized as a sin and a problem, whereas homosexuality is coming around to the point where you call light darkness and good evil and say, well, it's okay, it's fine, it's a beautiful union between two people.
I would say, though, Brad, on that same note, so is greed. Greed in the guise of success is considered to be a virtue. Competition and an aggressive spirit in the name of good stewardship is considered to be virtuous.
Ouch.
You see, but then
gossip.
Homosexual gossip in the name of prayer requests is considered to be virtuous and righteous, and yet homosexual union in the name of love is considered as a heinous act. And again, Scripture and Christian tradition are manifestly against homosexual behavior and homosexual union. But Christian tradition and text are also against these other things. And Chris's point still remains that we are being selective in our application of social institutions and social leverages against these kinds of things. Granted, we do make laws, and back to the whole issue of legislating behavior, we do make laws against larceny. We do make laws against insider trading. We do make laws against unfair market advantage. But the question is, are we really creating those laws out of moral sense? Do we feel that it's morally wrong? Or is it simply to preserve our capitalistic way of life? Do we say we are a capitalistic state, we make these laws in order to govern capitalistic behavior so that it's more efficient because we, you know. So really, what I would say to your question, Brad, about how you respond in the ballot box is, decide whether you're voting as a Christian or as a citizen of the state of California operating as a part of its political and social institutions. Do you, as a citizen of California, wish that I would like our state in its secularity simply to express the legal contract of marriage in these ways, click, because I believe it's more advantageous for society? Or do you go in there saying, I believe that this is a moral and spiritual issue? If you believe it's a moral and spiritual issue, then leave it in the sacrament of the church. If you believe that it is simply a social, pragmatic institution, then vote on your convictions there. What do you think is best for the state of California and its citizens in order to give them the highest value of living? See, because every citizen in this state is entitled to his or her highest value of living and protection of those things. And to kind of throw this into the pot and to turn the coin, I would say, and we didn't really touch on the issue of homosexuality per se, but we would have to say ethnic strife, homophobia, gay bashing, these are all social actions, social stances. You see, hate crimes are social actions. Hate crime language is social action. Do these natural responses of citizens within the state of California also receive sanction? Does hate language against homosexuals, because it's a natural response of a phobic heterosexual, it's natural, he's been that way all of his life, that's the way he should be, therefore he should be sanctioned and protected in order to be able to perform his homophobic actions and rantings. That person is a citizen as well. So do we sanction, protect, and legislate the viability of gay bashing languages, hate crime languages? It's natural. Xenophobia is a natural reaction seen in all human beings historically everywhere. See, people clan up into ethnic groups and they fight with other ethnic groups. This is natural. It's social. People groups do it. Should we sanction it? So when it comes back to it, we keep ending up at a higher moral standard for our legislation, that we keep saying something is wrong because it's wrong. The problem is that as Americans, we have a schizophrenia, that we really have separated church and state, and there is no way to wed them. We separated church and state at the very beginning based on a moral assumption of the way God had created it, which is a very strange thing. We hold that God has created all men equal and endowed them with certain inalienable rights. Therefore, we separate religion and politics, which is a very silly and irreconcilable situation. And I think no matter which way we vote on Prop 22 or other social sorts of situations, until we heal the schizophrenia of the American political and religious mind, we will not come up with any solution, because these two cannot be integrated and reconciled. Or as Jesus put it, my kingdom is not of this world. Otherwise, my servants would fight.
Well, we are out of time, but there's still an awful lot to talk about, an awful lot to think about, and I think now it's up to you to spend time thinking and praying about how you feel about these issues. We've been talking with Adam Ayers, Chris Holowaty, and Tom Dunn. We'd like to thank Chris Holowaty for engineering the show today. Thanks to Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible, and thanks to you for listening.